morning and welcome to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Our program may sound a little bit different today because we're having a few technical difficulties, but that doesn't take away from the fact that we have wonderful things to tell you today. So we will. Many stories coming up. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un are heading to Vietnam for their second summit. Also ahead, U.S. and China trade negotiators are working ahead of a March 1st tariff deadline. Australia is dealing with a lot of things. We'll get into that. And Japan lands on an asteroid. We begin, though, with President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Trump saying that he is optimistic about his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un over U.S. efforts to end the threat of Pyongyang's nuclear weapons arsenal. He had tweeted, "We both expect a continuation of the progress made at the first summit in Singapore, denuclearization," Trump said in a Twitter message on Sunday. After their first meeting last June, Trump boasted as he returned to Washington, "Everyone can now feel much safer than the day I took office. There is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea." But as he prepares to meet Wednesday and Thursday with Kim in Hanoi, that's the Vietnamese capital, there's little concrete evidence that progress has been made to set the specific terms of North Korea's promised denuclearization. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told CNN Sunday that there's no change in U.S. economic sanctions that are targeting North Korea until it agrees to full verifiable denuclearization. He said the United States is happy to make security assurances for North Korea's survival as an independent state, to make North Korea more like South Korea as an economic power. And he said the United States is offering North Korea an alternative to becoming a pariah state. But he also acknowledged that we've got some work to do to reach an agreement on how and when Pyongyang would destroy its nuclear arsenal. A demonstrable step toward denuclearization is very much what President Trump is focused on, Pompeo said. A top U.S. diplomat said American officials are aware of North Korea's history over the decades of making promises to disarm and then abrogating agreements. Trump said he's leaving for Hanoi early Monday, with Kim already on his way to Vietnam in an armored train. Kim's green and yellow train was spotted late Saturday crossing into China, and media reports say it's heading south, ending speculation that Kim might stop in Beijing before he ends up in Hanoi. North Korea's official news media carried photos of Kim boarding his train and announced he was heading to Vietnam to meet with the U.S. president for a second time. It's the first time that a North Korean state media has reported on the summit. In the early months of his presidency, Donald Trump said he would unleash fire and fury like the world had never seen on North Korea for its threats against the U.S. and its allies. But on Sunday, President Trump tweeted, "Great relationship with Chairman Kim." The U.S. leader said Kim realizes that perhaps better than anyone else, without nuclear weapons, his country could fast become one of the great economic powers anywhere in the world. And because of its location and people, it has more potential for rapid growth than any other nation. Trump said Chinese President Xi Jinping has been very helpful in his support of his meeting with Kim Jong-un. "And the last thing China wants," Donald Trump says, "are large-scale nuclear weapons right next door. Sanctions placed on the border by China and Russia have been very helpful," according to the president. U.S. intelligence officials remain skeptical that North Korea intends to follow through on Kim's Singapore pledge to denuclearize. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats told a congressional panel last month that North Korea has halted its provocative behavior by refraining from missile tests and nuclear tests for more than a year. As well, Kim Jong-un continues to demonstrate openness to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, Coates said. Despite the end of testing, Coates also added, "We currently assess that North Korea will seek to retain its weapons of mass destruction capabilities, and it's unlikely to completely give up its nuclear weapons and production capabilities." Coates added, "Our assessment is bolstered by observations of some activity that is inconsistent with full denuclearization." He said the North Korean leader and the rest of the country's rulers view nuclear weapons as critical to regime survival. Ira Melman is with me in the studio. Ira, what do you have today?
Well, I just want to say something about this first story that we've done, and I think what that points out is a dichotomy between what President Trump says and what his underlings, especially members of his intelligence community, have to say at all. And one wonders if this, why this might not be an effective way of going. While the president just boasts and says everything is fine and everything is going on, underneath him, you have all the rumbling by Coates and others who say, no, wait a minute. That is not the case. And what we are hearing is that the worst case scenario could be that these talks end up with North Korea getting a lot more than these people who are ever saying this say that they deserve, while the U.S. gets not as much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And also we have heard President Trump hint that there may even be a third summit beyond this one. So that also raises the question as to timelines, how fast things could be accomplished, and what could be accomplished, period. It's a very delicate issue. It's a very complicated issue. It's one that will certainly take a lot of time to play out, assuming that North Korea is going to make moves toward denuclearization. These are all things that we'll see in the coming days as it works out. Doug Bernard is also with me in the studio. How are you doing, Doug?
I'm doing well. You know, Hanoi is a very interesting choice of a place to hold this summit. Consider that for many years, the United States and Vietnam had an adversarial relationship. Vietnam was largely a closed country. It was and still is a communist nation. However, anybody who's been to Vietnam these days knows that it is just astoundingly vibrant. Economically, there is activity of all kinds. They still are very mindful, perhaps repressive of people's free expression rights. But I think what may be happening is the United States may be trying to sort of make the case to North Korea that you can be like Vietnam as well. You can open up. You can still retain your form of government. So this isn't, you know, a challenge to the Kim dynasty. But you can open up. You can improve the lot of your people, economically at least. And you can also improve your relations with other nations, not just the United States. So, you know, whether by choice or whether, you know, I'm just reading into a little bit here, it's an interesting choice of location and one that I think we might see next week the United States try to use as an example that Vietnam could be in some ways a model for North Korea as it moves forward.
We have seen quite an opening in Vietnam over the past few years, certainly a warming of relations between Washington and Hanoi, which was something welcomed by everyone after a long period of tense standoff following the Vietnam conflict many years ago. And Vietnam also is gaining a lot of economic stature because of the current trade dispute that the United States and China are engaged in. And we've seen some of the shift in business activity toward Vietnam's way, which is certainly something that President Trump wants to bring up in this summit with Kim Jong-un, the possibility that North Korea can benefit in much those same ways as you were talking about, Doug. Ira.
I heard something today that really kind of tweaked in my brain, and that was that one of the reasons that North Korea might not want to give up its nuclear issue is that if you take that issue away, what comes to the forefront is the human rights position and the human rights doing of North Korea, of Pyongyang, that would be, make the headlines if they gave up their nuclear capabilities. And that's just something to just factor in, think about a little bit.
And many groups have been really crying out for human rights being a part of these summits and negotiations. We have heard really nothing about that issue. And it's something that has been brought up for decades regarding North Korea and its treatment of its people. And to date, really, they're focusing on one thing, and that's nuclear disarmament. But what that means with regards to all these other issues is something that we continue to monitor and watch and see how they develop. You're listening to VOA Asia on the Voice of America, a rather special edition for us because as we have technical difficulties, we've taken this opportunity to have kind of a roundtable discussion on stories that are happening today.
We sound like a 24-hour news operation in the United States.
Ira Melman is with me in the studio as Doug Bernard. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. We move on to the U.S.-China trade negotiations, which have really been ramped up to almost a frantic pace over the past couple of weeks, as we are confronted with a March 1st deadline for tariff increases. President Donald Trump on Sunday saying that big progress is being made in the U.S. trade talks with China on what he calls so many different fronts. Mr. Trump tweeted, "Our country has such a fantastic potential for future growth and greatness with an even higher level." Trump said last week that he might put off the March 1st deadline to increase the tariffs on China if a trade deal appears close. But a China trade expert who served in the Obama administration says he has only seen incremental progress toward a trade deal. The realistic approach is that the deadline gets extended and the negotiations possibly go into the end of next year. And I would suspect, the former trade representative for China told us, that these will continue. Moon believes that the negotiators on both sides are failing to address the real reason of the U.S. imposed stiff sanctions on China in the first place, allegations that it is stealing U.S. intellectual property and China's demands that U.S. firms turn over trade secrets if they want to keep doing business in China. Now, the assistant trade representative for China, Jeff Moon, also said it's not possible to resolve those issues in just 2 weeks. He says they're very complex issues that require longer talks, so a quick settlement is not a good settlement. It just glosses things over.
Well, again, we have to think about what lies at stake here, and also what is called by many who are against President Trump's stance as an artificial deadline that could really cause problems ahead. There are all kinds of economic problems, especially if the United States does go ahead, institute doubled or tripled tariffs, and then China would do the same thing, which really could just muddy the waters of everything.
I think both Washington and Beijing recognize that a trade war or a trade dispute, whatever term you want to use, is in nobody's best interest, and everybody wants to do what they can to avoid it. But as we move forward, you know, it's also worth keeping in mind that the Chinese economy has not been doing so great of late. The economy has been slowing. They still have, I think, an annual growth rate of about 4 to 5%. I could be a little bit off on that figure, but that's down considerably, and it's not where Chinese leaders say they need to be if they want to keep meeting the needs of its growing and expanding population. So there is motivation for China to get some kind of settlement. There's certainly motivation for the United States. Consider the kinds of things that we're exporting to China, many agricultural goods. Well, who grows all that stuff? That's a lot of people who are Trump's base, President Trump's base. He doesn't want to get those people upset. He doesn't want to leave them in the lurch, as it were, with silos filled with, you know, spoiling soybeans and that kind of thing. So there's pressure on the United States as well to try and get some kind of resolution to this. Now, Ira brings up this March 1st deadline. Yes, of course it is an artificial deadline. And you have probably seen some of the same analysts that Jim and Ira that I've been reading, which is that, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, if they're making progress and if things are looking good by March 1st, certainly better than they were back in January, that's likely to get pushed. You know, they're going to push that deadline back and back just to keep making progress.
And also the fact that he wants to meet with Chinese leader Xi Jinping.
Right.
And that's not going to happen before the deadline, most likely. They have to set up where, they have to set out how, all of the manifestations of how to get there, where you're going, security, everything else like that. That's not going to happen. It might happen late in March, is what we understand. Maybe Mar-a-Lago, maybe someplace in China, wherever they go. But I talked to somebody today who was an economist who said to me, there's no way this isn't going to be pushed back.
Yeah.
And this has to be that way. So we'll see what happens.
And all that amid, you know, a growing sense of urgency. There was some talk earlier that perhaps Trump might try to meet with President Xi following this summit with Kim Jong-un, which would have been really a whirlwind kind of tour, and just not enough time to prepare for something like that. And like you mentioned, Doug, the farmers are out there, and there already have been problems with them. I mean, we've got steel tariffs that are affecting things that they buy in terms of equipment. We've got soybeans that, in fact, aren't going out as much as they were before. And President Trump has talked about a help for farmers in terms of some kind of a tax break or a special payment or something like that. You know, Jeff Moon is saying things are going to get messy over the long run if these things aren't settled rather quickly. He said Trump has muddied the negotiations by letting politics creep into these talks, such as issues with North Korea. And President Trump also kind of, you know, taking his grade as a president, if you will, by how the stock market does. Now, the stock market lately has been fairly upbeat with what has been happening in terms of trade negotiations with China, but that could sour at a moment's notice, as we have seen in the past. And these are things that obviously they want to try to get resolved quickly, or at least to enough to appease investors that, hey, things are, you know, rather settled here, and we don't have to worry about any sort of drastic moves like a 25% increase in tariffs.
Jim, to the degree that you could say anything's a guarantee in the news business, it is a guarantee that if these trade negotiations sour, if things start taking the wrong turn and progress looks like it's getting farther and farther away, that the stock market in the United States is going to take a hit. The Chinese economy is going to take another hit. This is something that neither nation wants to see. So, you know, again, you think about, you know, these motivators, these things that are, you know, pushing the nations to try and find resolution that works for both of them. Of course, President Trump has been very clear. He says he wants, I don't know if he uses this exact language, but something like a total reset of Chinese U.S. economic relations. That doesn't just happen, and that's not going to happen in these negotiations. So,
and the Chinese move very slowly when it comes to these things. Yeah,
they're thinking very long term. So, you know, obviously, we're not looking for any major reset. So I think the president is going to have to back away from that a little bit.
Well, at stake is a whopping $200 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports. That's all. And that would certainly have an immediate impact. China, in the meantime, is accusing the United States of violating global trade rules, saying that it is preventing the Chinese economy from thriving. China's stock market already is taking a hit right now. So that is also a motivator in these negotiations. Current U.S. sanctions on China were met with retaliation from Beijing by sanctions on some U.S. goods. So this story continues to move. We will follow it as it continues to progress.
Just very quick last note, and I'm sure this has come to both of you, but I think also another complicating factor, which we haven't mentioned, is the Huawei story and the detention of the CFO, Huawei CFO, in Canada. The United States wanting to extradite her to the United States. The United States making allegations against Huawei and her in specific. This is really kind of a thorn in the side of Chinese officials. And we've seen what may be thought of as some retaliation. We've seen Chinese officials detaining some Canadians, detaining some Americans, You know, so this again is something that people don't want to see accelerate, but decelerate.
And as that detention came right during the middle of negotiations with trade negotiators, which was certainly a surprise to them. And then Mike Pompeo, after that, going on his European swing and trying to urge allies not to use Huawei, as this whole 5G development is coming to us shortly in telecommunications, which is supposed to be earth-shattering, fantastic speeds like we have never witnessed before. And the competition for that business is intense.
Yeah.
Huawei certainly wants to be in the middle of that.
And they've been one of the leaders.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so you have further tensions among nations beyond the United States and China with regard to this and competing ideals, if you will. Some nations are saying, no, we don't see a threat. Other nations say, well, maybe we are. We're going to have to take a closer look at this. And so that has complicated the entire discussion, as you were very well to mention, Doug. Thank you. Well, we're going to move on here at VOA Asia. The Oscars are getting ready to be handed out in Los Angeles, and this is the time of year that many of us look forward to. Movie buffs around the world are going to be anxiously awaiting who are going to take home the big prizes. Well, we have a big prize because our own Anna Cook is on the red carpet in Los Angeles, or at least near the carpet. Anna is with us on the phone. How are you doing, Anna?
Thank you for having me today.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you, Anna. First of all, why don't you tell us what it's like to be out there in Los Angeles on the red carpet and a little bit about the preparation process for the Oscars?
Yeah, you know, the red carpet rolled out Wednesday morning, and there's just been a lot of activity on the red carpet since yesterday. Hundreds of reporters from all around the world reporting on the sidelines in anticipation for the celebrities to arrive. And the red carpet rolls 900 feet all the way down to Dolby Theater. There's just, and then fans have gathered all around Hollywood. You know, it's a beautiful day here in Los Angeles. So, just a lot of excitement here.
What are some of the things we're looking forward to during the ceremony? I know we're not going to have a host there.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of firsts in the this year's Oscars Academy Awards ceremony. So, it's the second time in the ceremony's history that they won't have a host, and that came after originally Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Academy Awards, but after he had some controversies with homophobic comments on Twitter, now they are going without a host. So that's supposed to shorten the ceremony from 4 hours usually, and this year it's going to be around 3 hours long. And if Roma wins anything, it will also be the first Netflix movie to win an award. And it's actually the first Netflix movie to be nominated for the Oscars, too.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting. If they need a fill-in, I know Doug Bernard and Ira Melman here have been warmed up for the last 25 minutes, so they're ready to go.
Let me add it.
I want to know her predictions. That's what I want to know.
Well, first, we can get to that in just a second. Anna, I mean, millions of people around the world are going to be watching this on television live. Is there any way that the public has a chance to see this in Los Angeles?
Yeah, actually, months ago, before the awards ceremony, there was some sort of lottery system where people could stand a chance to win tickets to the Oscars. And so around 700 tickets were given to the public. But they just get to sit up at the bleachers next to the red carpet and see the celebrities arrive. There's around 3,000 seats inside the Dolby Theater, but none of those are open to the public. So it's a pretty exclusive event.
How does this different from last year?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, there is no host this year. And the theme this year for the ceremony is Crystal Cloud. So there's a lot of just extravagant crystal installations on the stage. And the theme also seems to be roses. So there were a lot of roses installed on the red carpet. And there's supposed to be around 40,000 real roses on the stage as well.
Real quick, Anna, have you seen any celebrities? And what are your picks?
I have not seen any celebrities yet because I won't be on the red carpet. I'm inside the interview room where the celebrities or those who win awards will be walking in after they win their awards. So, but I've seen a lot of famous reporters from Entertainment News, Ryan Seacrest. So, yeah, it's been kind of exciting.
All right, Anna Cook, thank you so much. Live from the Oscars, we'll hear from you later. And I'd like to thank Doug Bernard and Ira Melman for being with me in the studio today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us at voanews.com and at VOA Asia Facebook. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow.